Welcome to the Sustainable Ag Writer Podcast, a podcast bringing you news and views about sustainable agriculture from across the southeastern United States. Every show will feature insightful interviews and deep dives into sustainable agriculture topics with farmers, ranchers, land-grant universities, and local food system advocates. Now, here's your host, Brennan Washington.
Welcome to another edition of Sustainable Ag Writer. I'm your host, Brennan Washington. Hope everybody out there is doing well. I'm very happy today because I just got word that they're soon going to be lifting travel restrictions on the organization I work with, which means I can get back out on the road and a sustainable ag rider could actually be riding somewhere. So I'm really, really happy with that. I did get both of my vaccination shots. We had the Pfizer in our household. And I know there's a lot of controversy out there about the vaccines. But I was between a rock and a hard place. It was either don't take the vaccine and run the risk of getting COVID. And I have some pre-existing conditions where if that were to pass, it would not be a good thing, or to take the vaccine and deal with any potential side effects. So I decided to go with the latter. So far, no effects. We had no effects so far on anyone in the family. And I'm just looking forward to getting back out there and seeing a lot of you and seeing all the great work that's being done in that sustainable and small-scale agriculture. This is going to be a series of special shows that I put together, and it's mainly going to be around applying for federal grants for small to mid-scale agriculture. And I want to do this series of shows because we're in the middle of grant season, and I just continue to see people make mistake after mistake after mistake, or have misperception after misperception after misperception about what federal grants are and what they can do for you. And so I put together a five-part series that's going to cover just the ins and outs of applying for federal grants for agriculture. Now, these are mainly going to be grants that pertain specifically to small-scale and sustainable agriculture. And in part two, we'll cover what those programs are. I just wanted to go, you know, it pained me. One grant program recently closed, and a couple of people called me because I try and sometimes coach people through the process. And two folks just made some of the basic mistakes that we should not be making, especially farmers of color who want to access these programs. It's just mistakes that we should not be making. So I decided to put together this series. So part one, today is just going to be a general overview of the grant writing, the grant application process. Part two is going to be what federal grants are applicable to many of my listeners out there. We'll talk about what those programs are, when they open, what they can be used for, and the mechanics of those programs. Part three will deal with the prerequisites that you need to complete before you apply for many federal grant programs. There are certain things that you have to have locked in place before you can apply for many of these programs. So we'll cover that in part three. Part four will deal with the actual writing of the grant. What are the key things you need to look for? What are the key things that you need to have in your application? And what are some of the major things that you should incorporate into your application to try and be successful in your grant writing pursuit? And in part five, we're going to talk about what happens after you actually submit your grant. So we're going to take a look at what the review process is, what actually goes on during that process, how the selection process and the review process goes for applications, and how winning applications are ultimately selected. I think that's important because, you know, usually step four, once you write and submit that grant, a lot of people don't know what happens behind the scenes. And having knowledge of what goes on in those grant review panels and those grant review processes is very important and can help you write stronger applications. I hope you're going to enjoy this series, and we're going to start with just an overview of federal grant programs. Ooh. Welcome back to the Sustainable Ag Writer. So we're talking today just doing a general overview of federal grant program. I guess the best way to start is exactly what are grants? Everybody likes grants for one specific reason. You do not have to pay them back. They're not a loan. They're not any obligation that you're going to have some future responsibility to pay back. And that relieves a lot of the pressure in obtaining funding because that obstacle is removed. You know, people just like to get this money and be able to use it and not have to be worried about repaying it at some future point in time. Now, do not get that confused with free money. You do have to do some things in order to satisfy the grant program. So it's not like you just apply for this money and if you're successful, get it, and then you go about your merry way. No, you have to adhere to certain conditions and standards as a condition of receiving that funding. So one of the first things we're going to talk about is grants and monetary awards that are to eligible organizations by the granting organizations. And this is the important part, to meet the specific objectives as laid out in the grant call. And that's very important. A lot of people, when they're approaching federal grant, don't realize that it's not only about meeting the needs that you have, but really meeting the needs of that granting organization. So if grant program that you're applying for, the goal of that program is to increase the availability of local food in your community, you need to be writing grants that meet that objective. You can't just write a grant to increase your production. That's fine, but how is it meeting the goals of that granting organization? And that's what you have to spell out. And that's what you have to be cognizant of when you apply to these different programs. What exactly is that granting authority wanting to do and wanting to accomplish by awarding these grant dollars? So grants don't have to be repaid. In many cases, there's some sort of monetary match that needs to be made. And we'll talk about that in one of the subsequent episodes. But grants typically do not have to be paid. Most agricultural grant programs are only accessible by certain entities, and they can be colleges and universities, nonprofit entities, nonprofit organizations, tribal authorities, governmental entities, agricultural cooperatives, state and local governments, such as departments of agriculture, are typically the audience and the recipients of many of these grants. There are very few grants out there that are accessible directly by farmers, and we'll talk about a couple of those. But there's very few out there. You typically need to be one of these eligible entities in order to apply for them. With a few exceptions, if you're applying as a for-profit business, there aren't going to be many grants out there for you. There are some exceptions, which we'll get into in a later episode. But if you're just a for-profit business, many times you're not eligible for these grants. Now, farms are for-profit businesses in most cases, and some grant programs, farmers can directly apply for this, but let's say you want to develop a sausage making business. Under most grant programs, you're not going to be an eligible entity unless you meet certain conditions, and we'll talk about those conditions in a later episode. But typically, you need to be one of the entities I mentioned. So those are what grants are, and a lot of people are attracted to grants for the very reasons I just stated. Right off the bat, let's get something out the way. Let's talk about what grants don't cover. So I wish I had a dollar for everybody who asks me where they can find a grant to buy land and start a farm. That's like the proverbial unicorn. There's no such thing. There are no USDA grant programs that you can apply to actually buy land. And I really want to get this point across because I see it come up again at conferences that I'm at. I see it come up time and time again through Facebook groups that I'm a member of, people coming on and say, well, I want to get started with a farmer. Where's my grant? You talk to like folks at NRCS and some other federal agencies, and I'll tell you the same thing. That's one of the number one requests that they get. Ain't no such thing, people. So if your primary interest accessing federal money is to get a grant to buy a farm, just stop, because that does not exist. It just doesn't. The only federal agency that will help you acquire land is the federal, the Farm Services Agency. And that's going to be a loan, not a grant. And even then, the hurdle is kind of steep if you're a new and beginning farmer to be able to qualify for that money. But if I don't pound anything else into you during this segment, you cannot get a grant to buy farmland, period. Some of the other things that you can't get a grant for, you can't get a grant to do construction. So let's say you do have a land, you do have some land, and you want to build some outbuildings or some barns on that particular piece of property. You can't do that. Most USDA grant programs do not have provisions that allow for the payment of construction cost. So that's something else to keep in mind as to what you typically cannot apply for a grant to do. Third thing is equipment purchases. And, this is another thing that I hear time and time again is, well, I need to get a tractor. Where can I get a grant to get a tractor? Or I need to get a combine. Or I need to get a walk-behind tractor. Where can I get a grant to get that? You can't. There are no grants out there. Most USDA agencies do not allow for the purchase of equipment. In addition, if you are interested in going into livestock, so you want to raise some cattle, you want to raise some goats, you cannot get a grant to actually purchase livestock through most federal grant programs. Now, there's some weird programs out there like Heifer International that used to do grant programs. And I'm not even sure if they consider that a grant where you could obtain some livestock. I think they've cut back on that a lot in the United States. But if you're going to go out and you want to buy 10 head of cattle, you're typically not going to find any grant funds to do that. So just keep in mind, you know, what I just said, because so many people look at these programs not understanding what they will absolutely not pay for. And like I said, no land purchases, no livestock purchases, no equipment purchases, and no construction costs are generally covered under federal grant program. Most of these grant programs are funded through the Farm Bill. And hopefully most of you out there know what the Farm Bill is. It is the predominant piece of legislation that governs the budget surrounding agriculture. So the entirety of the USDA's budget is covered through the Farm Bill. And I believe it's every 4 years that the Farm Bill is done. There's a saying in politics, a lot of sausage making goes on in the halls of Congress. Well, that happens with the Farm Bill. So every 4 years, all these various groups get together and decide what they want to see as far as interests are concerned in the Farm Bill. So in the 2018 Farm Bill, which was the last Farm Bill that we're working under right now, as of the time of this recording, some pretty good things happened for small to mid-scale agriculture. We got some permanent baseline funding for many grant programs that didn't have it. And what that means is that rather than having to come back year after year to ask for budget allocations for a particular program, it was just given baseline funding. So just for sake of argument, if you were running a grant program, say around conservation practices, if you didn't have baseline funding, you would have to come back every year and tell Congress you needed an allotment of funding to help you carry out your project. Under permanent baseline funding, an agreement is reached as to what that baseline is going to be. Let's say it's $1 million a year, and you get that baseline throughout the life of that particular Farm Bill. And then it's renegotiated again once it's time to do up a new Farm Bill. And why this is important is because many of the programs that a lot of small farmers are interested in, when they didn't have baseline funding, they would have to come back year after year to ask for money for their programs. What would happen is, depending upon the political environment, it would either be possibly be a decrease in funding for many of these programs. I've even seen a year in which many of those programs, at least initially before negotiations started, were actually zeroed out, meaning that they were given no funding. And so permanent baseline funding sort of helps that. We are in the 2018 funding Farm Bill, we saw increased funding for some programs. For example, the Southern SARE program got an increase. The Beginning Farmer and Rancher Development Program got an increase. The 2501 program got an increase. And that's good, because many of you listening out there, these are the programs that you're going to be interested in. They're not geared toward straight up commodity farmers, and they're really geared to a lot of the farming that a lot of folks like myself and everybody out there does. Another thing that has happened in 2018 Farm Bill was a simplified application process for many programs. So what that means is that if you're applying for, let's say, a $50,000 grant under the Beginning Farmer and Ranchers Program to set up a training program, and you hadn't even applied for it, and the Beginning Farmer and Rancher Development Program, for example, is the USDA's flagship program for training new and beginning farmers. The application process can be a bear if you've never had to deal with it, or if you've never applied for a grant before. So what USDA, and in this case, the National Institute of Food and Agriculture, what they've come up with is a simplified process to make it easier for those organizations who don't have the grant writing muscle to maybe apply for those $600,000 or $750,000 grants to be able to compete, to at least get their foot in the door and get some funding. So that was mandated for many of the programs that we're going to be talking about over the next couple of weeks. Another big thing that happened in the 2018 Farm Bill was the development of urban agriculture and youth agriculture education department within USDA. I was particularly happy about the urban ag, being a quote unquote urban ag farmer myself and someone who's been speaking the merits, talking about the merits of urban ag for quite some time. I was really glad to see that this got put into the Farm Bill. And so now that we're a year or two removed from the actual application process, what has happened is that the Urban Ag Initiative has been housed under the National Resource Conservation Services, NRCS, and they're going to have grant-making ability. They are actually putting together a National Advisory Committee. They did put out some grants this year. I wasn't really pleased with the way that process played out, but they did put out some grants this year, mainly to municipalities to do urban ag-related projects. But the important thing to remember is that attention is being paid to urban agriculture, and that's really important. Also, youth agriculture. One of the things that frustrates me when I talk with people across the Southeast and actually across the nation is the frustration about the total lack of funding to put on youth education programs in agriculture. And I know there's 4-H and I know there's FFA, but people saying, well, we need more than that. And not only do we need more than that, we need to start at getting kids involved in agriculture at a much, much earlier age, because typically the position of most USDA grant programs is that they won't even consider youth education programs unless you're talking about kids who are 17 or 18. And there's a good chance that, and this is the operative thinking, is that where those 17 or 18 year olds may actually become farmers. You know, the pushback you'll hear from many agencies, well, if we're dealing with kids who are 10 or 12 or even 5 or 6, there's no guarantee that these children are going to want to become farmers. And there's a lot of folks, myself included, who say, well, if you're not reaching them at those ages, then you're basically seeding the grounds to other professions. You know, in many cases, a kid who is 17 or 18 years old, they sort of have a mindset of what they want to do as a career. And if they haven't been introduced and worked around agriculture and know all the possibilities that a career in agriculture can lead to and what that means, then they're not going to look at it, you know. And I always use the analogy of professional sports. So for those of you who like professional sport, you know, take basketball or football. Sports, starting from colleges and even into the pros, they're looking at kids not when they're 17 or 18, but they're looking at youth development leagues. They're looking at kids as far down as peewee leagues. And when kids are 7, 8, 9, 10, they're identifying talent and then grooming that talent to possibly develop a career and develop their talent into a career. through professional sports. And so at some point, I'd hope the USDA would take that mindset. But at least they've started with this youth agriculture education department. There's a lot that's not known about how that's being currently managed. But that was in the last farm bill. And there's many details still to be worked out with many of these programs. But it's very important that you know what the farm bill is. It's very important that you get involved with having your voice heard about what's going to be in the farm bill. And that includes, you know, if you don't like the way a particular program is run, you need to let your legislative representatives know about it. If there's something you want to see included, you know, for example, youth education around agriculture, that's something you need to let your representatives know about. Too often, certain segments of our communities, for various reasons, do not raise our voices and provide the input that we need provided to see that our goals are included in these type of bills. So that's the farm bill. Some other things I want to say about grants is beware the grant trap. And what I mean by that, view federal grants as basically startup capital. You want to do something, and a federal grant can be the stepping stone that gets you on your way to where you want to be. Like I said, you view it as a form of startup capital, but you should always try and build long-term sustainability into your project. So, for example, if you're applying for some money to start a farmer's market, for example, you need to have a plan for how that farmer's market will support itself once that grant funding ends. You can't continue to chase grant funds, so you need to be thinking about that. What am I going to do? What am I going to use this grant money for? And what am I going to do once this grant funding ends? Continuing to apply for grant after grant after grant is not a sustainable solution. You know, you need to really be thinking about how to make your project sustainable over the long term. In fact, many programs now are requiring the applicant to explicitly state, how are you going to continue this program once this grant is over. And you're actually graded on that in your responses. So that's something to think about. Another thing is to think, be strategic in how you approach these grants. And that's what we're going to spend a little time talking about in this episode. We're going to be talking about in this episode is, what's a good way to approach these grants? How do you identify them? When should you be applying for them? And we're going to spend a little bit of time talking about those. The people who are successful at these things, at applying and receiving these monies, typically have a game plan. They have a game plan. They're saying, all right, I know the local food promotion program is coming out, typically comes out in early spring. I want to apply for it. They typically start their planning maybe a year ahead. If you wait until they actually release a call for proposals, if you got the grant writing muscle, you may be able to put together a winning application, but most of us are not. If you wait until that RFA or that call for proposal comes out and you've got 8 weeks to put together a grant application, a better way to look at it is, if you know the schedule of when these grants come out, to start preparing at least a year in advance. That's my advice. And in part two of this series, we are going to talk about all of the important grant programs and when they come out. And they generally do not change the timing of their announcements. So, you know, for example, Southern SARE, their producer grants come out every September. It hasn't changed as long as I know for quite some time. There's only some rare instances where a grant program will actually significantly change the timing of their announcements. So knowing that, and knowing that if you have a strategic process for what you want to do and how you want to apply for this money, you can really develop a good game plan to get you ready to identify and successfully apply for these grants. So once again, when you're thinking about grant funding, it's very important for you to align what you're looking to achieve with the goals of what that granting organization is trying to do. If you're applying to the Farmers Market Promotion Program, which support direct producer-to-consumer marketing channels, if you're applying for that to do pasture development on your farm, you're in the wrong grant program. You're not, you haven't aligned and looked at what the goals of that program is and aligned your goals with the goals of that particular program. So we've talked about the types of grants that are out there. And we'll get into more specific as the actual programs in the next episode. We talked about who can apply. So your tribal entities, your nonprofits, your land grant universities, your colleges and universities. Typically, you'll see a lot of our 1862 and 1890 land grant universities applying for grants in these spaces and they're eligible entities. And we talked a little bit about what a grant is. Now I want to talk about some basic do's and don'ts. First one, we'll get more into this when we talk about actually writing a grant, but do not wait till the last minute, people. Do not wait till the last minute. I was working with a group that was applying for a grant. Good folks. They were applying for a grant and the system had a hiccup and the grant, I don't remember when the grant was due, but they were applying within 10 minutes of when that deadline closed and they had a hiccup in the system. And by the time they got around to reconnecting and trying to submit the grant, the window had closed. Now, luckily in this case, the granting agency was kind enough to reopen the window for submission for a particular, a specific time. But that wouldn't have been an issue if they hadn't waited till the last minute. So, and so many people get knocked out by this. You know, some of the systems and some of the things we're going to talk about when it comes to applying for these grants, they could be pretty cumbersome and pretty involved in terms of actually submitting your application. I'm not talking about writing it or putting in or getting your support letters. I'm talking about actually submitting the grant through a system so that it can be accepted and then the review process can begin. You don't want to wait. You know, if a deadline is 11:59, you don't want to wait until 10:59 on that day to start submitting your application. Actually, you should shoot for trying to have your application in at least a week before whatever the deadline is. So that's just basic knowledge that a lot of people, just a basic habit that people just don't realize, you know, because if you're waiting to the last minute, I'm going to guarantee you that other people are. So that increases the stress on the system and increases the chance that you're going to have hiccups when you're applying for it. And not every granting agency is going to be kind enough to say, okay, we'll reopen it for you. Some of them just say, well, you're shit out of luck, you know? So don't wait till the last minute. Get that call for proposal early. And we're going to talk about the 1 year look ahead in the next episode. We're going to talk about laying out a 1 year strategic plan for applying for these things, but don't wait till the last minute. The other big problem is granting agencies put out their request for applications and their call for proposals for a specific reason. It is the Bible, how you need to apply for that grant, what should be included in your application, who's eligible, when the deadlines are, who to grant if you have questions, who do you contact. And I got a call from someone the other day and we were talking about something. And, you know, at the end of the call, I could tell that the person did not read the grant call. Because one of the critical elements that was required to be in this particular grant was not included. Person had made some assumptions about whether or not they need to be included. Well, you don't need to make assumptions. It tells you in the RFA or the call for proposals. It tells you what needs to be in that grant. You don't need to guess. You don't need to make assumptions. It's in that call for proposal. It's in that request for applications. It's in there. So read that. You shouldn't get all excited about writing a grant without understanding what the rule book is. And so as we talk about developing a strategic plan to apply for these grants, it's important that you understand what the rule book is, basically. Agencies put out these call for proposals and RFAs for very specific reason. One, to give you all the information that you need to put together a solid application. They also look to level the playing field. So you will see something you may think is mundane. They may tell you your application needs to have 1-inch margins with 12-point font, not to exceed 15 pages. The reason why that is, they want a uniformity of applications, because if you're writing your application in 12-point font and I decide I want to write my application in 8-point font, guess who's going to stick information in an application? The folks doing the 8-point font, because it's just smaller. You're going to get more words to the page. So it's a way of leveling out what the playing field is going to be. And in closing, what I'm going to say is that we're going to talk about how to look at grants, what they are, and how to approach it from a strategic standpoint as opposed to a reactive standpoint, meaning that an RFA comes out, you're going to stick in an application based upon that RFA. That's the absolutely wrong way to look at approaching federal grants. Your first task should be, I need funding to do a particular thing for my farm or for my organization. And this is what I need to do. And this is how much it's going to take. And then once you have all those goals and once you have all those objectives in mind, then you go out and look at what programs can fulfill your needs. So going back to the example, if you're looking to do pasture development on your farm to improve the health of your pastures on your farm, you're not going to go to the Farmers Market Promotion Program and apply for money because that doesn't align with what the Agricultural Marketing Service, AMS, obligates that money to do. And this is, and I'm going to continue to harp on this throughout the 5 episodes. If you're not in alignment with what the goals of that granting organization is, you're not going to be successful in applying for these grants. So that's just a quick overview. We're going to start to do some deep dives in, starting with episode 2. We're going to start to talk about what types of grants there are up there, what agencies put them out, what the timeline is for some of these grants. And I hope that you will use these episodes to help you develop a timeline and a strategic vision for how you want to incorporate grant funding into your operations, whether you are a nonprofit that works with farmers or a researcher at a land-grant university, be it 1862 or 1890, or you're just a farmer. Hopefully, we will put together a roadmap for how you can apply for these for this funding. So I hope to be with you next. I'll be with you next week when we'll be talking about the grants that are out there. And I'm going to put some just basic information in the show notes. I'm looking forward to working with all of you on making you more successful and resilient and financially viable operations, be you an 1862 and 1890 nonprofit or an actual farm. So see you next week. This has been a
Thank
Sustainable
you for
Ag
listening
Writer.
To the Sustainable Ag Writer podcast. Please visit our website at sustainableagwriter.com, where you can subscribe to the show on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and Spotify. If you found value in this show, we'd appreciate a rating on iTunes. Please tell your friends and colleagues about the show and follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Once again, thank you for listening to the Sustainable Ag Writer podcast, sustainable ag news and views.